Hey everybody, Shane Pressley here, Rock Paper Podcast. I am super excited to welcome Freddie D'Angelo Studios to the show. They are now a proud sponsor, and if you don't know Freddie D'Angelo Studios, they are a full-service media production company based out of St. Louis and serving clients worldwide. Where if you can dream it, they can create it. Check out FDS all over your social media. You can get involved with them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Check out freddiedangelo.com for all your video and photo needs. If you haven't met Freddie yet, you've probably seen him around shows or seen some of his work online. He's just been doing some amazing things with his camera. So get involved. Check it all out. Again, freddiedangelo.com.
Podcast is kind of like it's like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
This is Jacob Baxter with Native Sons and the Blue Fruit Snacks and other various projects. And we're here with Shane, and you're listening to Rock Paper Podcast.
Hey everybody, Shane Pressley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri. Hanging out today with Jacob Baxter. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Yeah, man, thank you for having me.
Yeah,
much appreciated.
Yeah, man, I'm excited. This is cool. This is our first time really getting to hang out. I mean, we've, you know, bumped into each other at the bar a couple times.
Yeah, yeah.
I know.
Through social media, kind of.
Sure. Yeah,
chatted.
Yeah. I think we first met through a Blue Fruit Snack show at Oyster Bar.
I think so as well, yeah.
I think you guys opened for Cluster Pluck or something.
Yep.
Down there like maybe a year or something ago or
yeah,
whatever it was. And remember, I think that was the first time we officially met, and I think that was the night I met Anna and Jesse and everybody too. And,
yeah.
So anyway, that's where I've been kind of keeping an eye on you since, and I know you've been playing around town a bunch, and I thought this would be fun to get to hang out and get to know more about your story and stuff. So
yeah, man, right on.
So let's start at the beginning, man. You originally from St. Louis area, or?
I'm actually from Central Illinois.
Yep.
North of Bloomington Normal. My dad's a farmer and my mom's a teacher, and so I grew up out in the country, and just doing. I never really played instruments when I was younger. I did a lot of singing. My mom was a good singer. And we did a lot of singing at church and just various events, and used to kind of be in little village troops and stuff that these little towns would kind of put on. And then when my parents split up, which I was in like fourth or fifth grade, we moved down here to O'Fallon, which is then where I went through the rest of my schooling, and kind of fell in and out of doing music at different points in times. I'd had a guitar when I was younger, and I'd kind of would pick it up and put it down, learn like Amazing Grace or something, and
yeah,
then kind of lose interest. But it wasn't until I was like 12 or 13 that I started, I remember it was Black Sabbath Paranoid. I got two or three Stones records that were like compilations, and I got Led Zeppelin had just put out Mothership, you know, the kind of compilation record that
right,
had their bio and stuff, and I just remember pouring all over that stuff, and pretty soon I was like, damn, like maybe I need a guitar. Like I'm starting to, you know, it started to really hit me then. I saw these pictures of Jimmy Page and all these people with these beautiful guitars, and I'm like, okay, maybe that's like something that I kind of want to do. And like I lied about it for a while to my friends and stuff. I told them I played guitar when I didn't even own one, because I was like already trying to formulate
right,
this, you know, this thing in my head or whatever. And so then on my 13th birthday, the same day I got my braces on, my mom got me a guitar, and I started just kind of learning how to play it. I took some lessons for a little bit with a guy named Sean Robinson, who is a guitar player in town. He plays for a band, I think, called Good for the Soul, but he plays a lot of jazz at the Bistro, a real good guitar player. And he kind of tried to teach me sheet music, and I kind of backed away from that. And so then our lessons kind of just comprised of us jamming on like blues and stuff. And like he kind of directed me on how to learn some stuff by ear and some different phrasings and different stuff. So that was kind of where I got started. In 7th or 8th grade, I was in my first band, with a buddy of mine named John Klinger, and we kind of were writing songs and playing. We played a school dance in eighth grade.
What was that band name?
I think it was called Blackout.
All right.
Yeah, and I think our symbol was just like an eclipse sun. We had a MySpace, so we were real legit, you know? And we played like the eighth grade school dance for half an hour and got paid like $50.
Hey,
nice. So, yeah, that was like the start of it kind of being fun, and I like got bit by the bug about right then. I'm like, this is cool.
That's kind of gone away, I think, like the school dance band and stuff like
that. Yeah, and it's a shame.
Yeah, a lot of it's like just DJs and stuff. I mean, I guess it's a little more what the kids want. I mean, they want dance songs and things. But, like,
yeah.
I remember, I'm a huge ZZ Top fan. And, like,
yeah.
I think that's where they got their start.
They absolutely did. Allman Brothers did, too. And a lot of those early bands.
Yeah. So, I imagine that would be, like, just crazy thinking about, like, you know, you saw ZZ Top in, you know, late 60s or whatever. And you were playing your high school dance and stuff.
It's like a picture in the yearbook.
Yeah.
You know, entertainment by ZZ Top.
Yeah. And I think at the time they spelled it out too, like
ZZ,
with two T's, E's. And, and
no beards.
Beards yet and stuff. But it would just be crazy to imagine, like, we saw those guys a long time ago and before they blew up. But, you know, hey, maybe someday somebody will share that story about seeing Blacked Out on.
Yeah. We should have been Blacked Out.
Blacked Out.
Blackout. Yeah, that was. That was some far out stuff. That was a fun little band though, man. I remember the drummer and I actually played all throughout high school together, and him and I, you know, remained close. And he turned into such a good drummer. He started doing marching band, man. And that really just got his thing down. But I did choir in high school.
Yeah.
Did like chamber choir stuff, like all a cappella, like Renaissance music and old stuff. We gotta have a great music program at O'Fallon. I did a little bit of jazz combo and stuff.
Yeah. Nice, man. So it's always been guitar or?
It's always been guitar.
Yeah.
I've picked up the mandolin at different points in time. I can kind of comp chords on it. The same for piano. I can just kind of mess around a little bit, but I'm not much of a player in that regard. But yeah, I've always just had a thing for the guitar was what I wanted to play, and I wanted to play it all the time.
Yeah. How'd you, leaving high school and stuff, when did you realize that you can get into playing original music and stuff like that?
I got accepted to Columbia in Chicago for music, and I went to a semester of that and I hated it, and I dropped out of that right away because I can't read any sheet music. And so I just, all these other kids were just like trained guitar players that have been playing sheet music since they were three, you know, and I just couldn't learn it quick enough and I couldn't pick it up quick enough, and it wasn't acceptable. You know, I could play it by ear. If I heard it one time, I could play it back to them, but I couldn't read it off a page. So I left Chicago and moved back to my dad's house in the country, kind of with my tail between my legs a little bit, kind of not wanting to do music. I wanted to give up music pretty bad then and maybe go to school to do something else. And then I started playing with this guy named Craig Gertis, who is a phenomenal country musician, and he's much older than me. But I started playing in his band, and he kind of took me under his wing, and he played all original music for the most part, and he just had me playing bar shows. And so I really got it. He took me out on the road for the first time down in like Texas, Louisiana, when I was like 19, and I started to really just see all these musicians all over the country, you know, kind of doing original music and making it happen. And that started to get it working in my head that that's a direction that I should kind of go.
Yeah, man.
And so.
Yeah. I do think it's kind of crazy. I mean, like I said, I've never been a musician to you know, learn how to read music or any of that kind of stuff. But I think there's a lot of people like yourself that just play a lot more by feel or hear it and stuff. They're not exactly you know, classically trained to be able to read it and all that stuff like that. So
yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I was actually just listening to Howard Stern show. It was a repeat, but it was all this stuff about Jimi Hendrix from his it would have been his 75th birthday.
Okay.
Like November. And it was just hearing stories about him and like coming up and like his playing guitar and like, you know, teaching himself how to play it upside down and restringing it and all this stuff, you know, like
yeah, yeah,
and all, you know, it's just nothing about his the way he played it made sense, but it worked, you know.
Yeah.
And like, and he, you know, didn't let him slow him down at all. And stuff.
No, there used to be a lot more of that.
Right.
You know, you really look at a lot of those guitar players in the 40s, the 50s, and the 60s, man, and like they were not necessarily trained guys, and they were forced to just kind of come up with their own way of figuring the damn thing out,
right.
Which ends up making you a way more creative musician in general. You know, there's a lot more originality. You know, you turn on the country station or anything now, man, and every single, you can't even tell the difference between these guitar players or these musicians in general. They all sound exactly the same. And it's because everyone is, you know, learning off YouTube from the same, you know, it's changed the dynamic of how people learn. And there used to be a lot more originality and feel in it,
sure.
When people had to just figure it out by themselves and kind of make their own thing happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree, man. It's, it does seem like, little more cookie cutter kind of stuff lately, you know, but
yeah,
but there's still a lot of greats out there that are doing cool stuff.
Without a doubt.
You know, but yeah, it's just sometimes it's tough to stand out when being an original act and stuff. And
yeah,
you learned a lot from him on the road and stuff, and when did you guys set up here in St. Louis playing and stuff like?
Well, I was playing in that band for a really long time, for almost 2 years, and then I started kind of playing with this other band down in Cape Girardeau for a little while, and I was kind of living down there, and then that band kind of fell apart fairly quickly, and so I moved back to O'Fallon because this is where my family is, and it was just, St. Louis started more and more to kind of seem like an appealing place to make a good start. You know, it's fairly cheap to live. The scene is pretty accessible, and I already, you know, knew a few people around, but not too many people. And I felt like, you know, Chicago is a hard city to attack kind of from the ground up. It's almost a city you need to attack with already a following. And so, you know, it was kind of between either moving back to Chicago, where I had some contacts, or moving here to St. Louis. And I thought that this was going to be a place that I was going to find a little easier to get a foot in the door,
yeah,
and meet some people.
I think that's a lot of what keeps them. I think St. Louis is also, you know, very affordable especially for musicians. I mean, it seems like I noticed doing enough of these now that like a lot of musicians living around in the same couple neighborhoods.
Yep.
A lot of like Tower Grove and stuff, and like, you know, because they found out that, you know, it's affordable to live there and still be able to, you know, you can pay rent and be able to play music and stuff and things. So, you know, yeah, I think this is a great scene to kind of, you know, very welcoming to anybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like, it seems like everybody around here just is very happy to collaborate and jam and, you know, welcome to, you know, hey, let's play. So,
yeah.
I would imagine like that's the nice appeal to a younger artist coming up and stuff, like having all that, and especially like St. Louis is very rich in culture and history.
Absolutely.
And stuff too, so there's a lot of older players still around that are happy to share some of their knowledge and things too, so that's also a great thing to have. So
that's a passion of mine too, man. I'm big on history. I just eat it up, and that was another thing with St. Louis that I just, every single day that I go into that city, I seem like I find another little snippet of history that I find just so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a city that I just want to continue to explore, not only musically, but also with photography and also with history, you know? Yeah. It's just got a lot to offer.
Yeah. I mean, for me doing the show, I mean, it's obviously rooted in the music. I mean, that's my one of my biggest passions for sure. But,
absolutely.
But the other, you know, sub context of the show for me is allows me to, one, get out meeting people, and that is great networking, and then also allows me to get out and see different parts of the city that I might have gone to myself, you know. It's like, so I'm always constantly learning more about my hometown, kind of, you know. So it's a lot of fun for me to just to get in, like I said, getting out, seeing these different parts of the city and things, and seeing where the show is going to take me. But
yeah,
I love it, man. Like I said, I was you know, born and raised, like I said, outside in Wentzville and stuff. So like, I'd come to the city for you know, concert or whatever, baseball game and things, but I didn't really spend a whole lot of time down here until, you know, I was well into my, you know, maybe late 20s or something. I really started heavily getting, you know, involved in the set music scene down here and stuff. And so, you know, I'm still fairly new to St. Louis, you know, I'm still constantly discovering stuff. And it's fun, man.
Yeah, and there's good stuff around the city too, man, because like over here in O'Fallon, like O'Fallon, Belleville, all this area, there's a lot of just awesome places, you know, that are just part of St. Louis as far as I'm concerned, you know. It's just all one beautiful metropolitan area.
Yeah, greater St. Louis, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, man. So today you've been jamming with, we mentioned Anna and Blue Fruit Snacks. You play with them around town some. Play with, you got the Native Sons you're now a part of.
Yeah, and that's starting to really become a major focus of like my year for sure.
Yeah.
So we got a lot of big things that we're trying to plan. We got a record. We're all very, very pleased with the original music that Nate has been writing, as well as, you know, we've kind of been contributing as well. And the whole Mud Pie thing that Nate's doing, you know, with that Roots magazine, I contribute to that as well. And Dan Turner, who's in the band with Native Sons, is one of the editors. And, you know, the whole thing with the River City Opry and all that, that scene, the kind of Americana, rootsy country scene, is seeming like there's a little bit of action, you know, the pot's starting to get stirred a little, and it's neat to, it's exciting.
For sure. Yeah. So Native Sons are more kind of roots.
Yeah,
roots.
Absolutely. It's like Redheaded Stranger, Willie Nelson style stuff. Very sparse as we can possibly make it in a lot of cases. And we throw some bluegrass and some other stuff in there, but we do a lot of just like slow, spacey kind of country.
Yeah. And you can catch Native Sons every Monday night at 1860 Saloon.
Yep, right there in beautiful Soulard.
Yeah. And you guys got a couple other things coming up. You can always keep up with them online on the Facebook page and stuff. But you mentioned Opry, and you guys said you're like the house band for the night.
Yep, we're hosting that night. The River Kittens are going to be there.
Yeah. So if you don't know, River City Opry's a fairly new thing. I guess Brad was like the founding, or one of the founders.
He's pretty much the director in charge of it.
So Brad Jackson has been putting this together, and it's just sort of a big old, you know, group jam session. Kind of, you know, they get a lot of people kind of come and play a couple songs, but it winds up being a lot of players kind of sitting in with other bands and different kind of things. It's on Sundays once a month.
Yep.
Over at Off Broadway, and this year or this month, February, coming up will be February 16th. You have, like I said, Native Sons will be there, but along with River Kittens, Old Capitol, Nick Gusman, you know, a lot of.
I think Atlas Express is rumored to make an appearance around there.
Yeah.
Neil and Drew.
Yeah, those guys are a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm playing with them tonight, actually.
Oh, nice.
At Foam, I just got a text from Drew. Right before he came over, asking if I'd play. I sit in with them every now and then when Gabe, their guitar player, he's a phenomenal player. When he's not able to make it, I usually go and do some sitting ins.
Hey,
wild, fun, you know, and far
that,
out time.
And that band definitely seems like sort of a kind of a conglomerate, like with a couple of different guys sitting in and stuff.
It's a revolving cast of characters. It's a revolving cast of music.
Right.
To be quite honest, you know, you will never see two LS shows that are going to ever be the same.
Yeah.
That couldn't even remotely happen.
Yeah. come out to River City Opry. And again, you can follow more details of that on Facebook as well. There's a page for that. And we mentioned playing with Anna. You do have another date coming up. You'll be January 24th over at Venice Cafe. You'll be playing with Anna.
Yep.
And you said a lot of times it's just you two.
And sometimes we have people sit in and stuff. It can be a revolving cast as well. We usually play 3 or 4 hours. And actually, Monk from Monk and the People, who is a buddy of ours, is going to come and open up the show for us and do a little jamming as well.
Yeah, cool, man.
Yeah, so it's going to be good.
Great, man.
Yeah, man, nice guy, too. Yeah. I like him. He's a Belleville cat.
Yeah.
He's an Illinois boy as well.
Yeah, man. We've done a couple of podcasts over here on the Illinois side and stuff. So he is really cool to see the success, too, with Monk and the People. Because when I first met him, he was just doing loop a lot of, you know,
oh, yeah,
a lot of
just
stuff.
Him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was great. I loved it, but it's really cool to see the full band having some background singers and Matt on saxophone and everything.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Ben is a great bass player.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That whole crew is are good peoples.
Definitely.
Yeah. They're nice.
You, and with Anna, that's kind of a little, allows you to kind of, rock a little more, you know, you get a...
Yeah, it's kind of like blues, folky, island rock kind of stuff, and yeah, that's a little more jammy and spacey kind of stuff.
Do you just like doing it all, or is there a certain, you know, particular thing you like doing more, or is just whatever calls for that night?
Man, yeah, I get turned on by a lot of different types of music, man, and I enjoy trying to find a place in about any musical situation that I possibly can find. And I found that the way that I'm most successful at doing that is just by always saying yes to a gig and just going and seeing if I can't figure something out, you know? And I love playing the jam stuff with Anna because it gives me a lot of freedom, you know? And she kind of lets me a lot of times direct the dynamic of the song and call certain parts out. So there's a lot of creative freedom in that sense, which is fun as a guitar player to kind of be able to sculpt some things and not just have it be like a, you know, a very stagnant lead or a very stagnant musical piece. You know, you can kind of, she's willing to weave through many things.
Yeah.
But playing with Native Sons is also great, man, because I play about half as many notes and I get to sing a lot of harmony, which I love doing. Nate and I both take our acoustic guitars and run them through amplifiers.
Okay.
And that's kind of our sound, which is super fun to try to experiment. You can even experiment a little bit with feedback and just various, just kind of getting like ambient noise out of the amplifiers while we're playing, and that's pretty fun.
Yeah. That's how I like listening to my music, though. Like, you know, I don't listen to the same stuff all the time. You know, I like a lot of variety when I listen, but doing enough of these now and meeting all these guys, you know, I think when I was younger, I just assumed that people had like one band and that's what they did.
Yeah.
But now getting to know more of you artists and stuff, like I've learned a lot of you have a rock band, a country band, a cover band or whatever, you know, it's like, just to, you know, because they're not all the bands are as active as, you know, some others and stuff. So it's like, some play out all, you know, every week and some play out once a month or different things. But also that variety keeps everything fresh for you and everything also allow you to try different things and learn from, you know, maybe you learn this lick on something here and you can apply it to that or do something different, you know? So it's like, I think that's just really cool to keep it all, you know, constantly evolving and stuff. And
keeps you on your toes.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And you get to meet a lot of new people that way.
Yeah.
You know, 'cause St. Louis has kind of got a lot of different mini scenes kind of going on, you know, and if you're playing in several of them, it's cool because you can almost have like three or four different groups of friends that you're kind of, you know, can call on at any point in time. And that's, I really enjoy that aspect of it too. I'm a social type of person.
Yeah, man. Well, you got your guitar and you're talking about some of the Native Sons sound with your acoustic and things you want to, and you have your acoustic ready to go. Do you want to give us a little something?
Yeah, man. I'll play a song I wrote probably last year. It started out as two different songs and ended up being one song, and I kind of wrote it. It's called Retta. And the chorus I had written about a dog that I knew that was named Loretta, but we called her Retta. She was like a little hunting beagle. She was a little rabbit dog. She was super cool. And so the chorus I kind of wrote about her, and then the verses I kind of wrote just about life up in the small town up at Dad's and just kind of my 2 years of sort of exile, just living out in the middle of nowhere, you know, with a very small group of friends and a lot of beer, which is an interesting combination. So yeah, I'll play you this tune.
All right.
Too many strangers in this town. behind the plow. And that sad old sow. Halfway through your round by now. Better have fear. You'll be gone within the year. Leave it still.
One I wrote about a year ago. My buddy Jake Ellerbrick and I kind of have a project. He's going to school up in Columbia right now in Chicago, and him and I have a little project that we just call Yard Eagle, but currently it is not really in existence. It's kind of just an idea in our heads.
Yeah.
But that's one of the tunes that if we ever were going to cut a record, was definitely going to be one of the ones that we do. Nice. And if I ever do a solo record, which I plan to this year, that's one of the tunes that I'm probably going to put on there.
Yeah, I was just going to ask... I was thinking when you're playing, if you ever had desire to be the front man, having a Jacob Baxter band or anything like that.
Yeah, that's something, that's a goal that I want to have, but it's a matter of finding kind of the right cats.
Sure.
Because I, when I was kind of living back at my dad's, I had a trio, and I was the front guy, and we just played bar gigs, and we were all like underage and shit, yeah. So it was pretty fun, but like, you know, we were doing mostly cover music, we weren't really doing originals or anything, and... yeah, but we played around a lot, and then every now and then I'll go back up and throw together a band that I front or whatever, but that's something that I want to do in this city. I want to find a bass player, and I want to find a drummer, and either another guitar player or a keyboard player, and start doing some music. Because, yeah. Like, I do a lot of just solo acoustic stuff around,
right.
Just doing kind of bar cover gigs and this and that and the other, but I'd like to kind of have my own thing as well.
Yeah. I was also thinking, just because it's fresh on my mind, but that listening to Howard talk about Jimmy on my whole my hour drive over here, you know, he's going on about him a lot, but they were talking. He talked about the song "Fire."
Yeah, and, man, that's one of my favorite Hendrix tunes. Yeah.
Well, he was saying that according to story, that Jimmy wrote that song about his dog or about the. or about a dog, I guess. I don't know. I'm not positive it was his, but the dog was in front of the fire, and he had said, "Move over, Rover, let Jimmy take over," and that spawned the whole song, apparently. So
yeah, whoa, no
so
way.
So it was just kind of a funny story hearing Jimmy writing this classic song about a dog, and then I come here and you wrote about your dog and stuff. So
yeah,
it was just kind of a weird coincidence and stuff.
But, interesting, yeah.
Yeah, but,
yeah. I never knew that about fire. That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, who knows if that's for real, but that's the...
I can see it being real.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to believe that's
right,
real.
Right, yeah.
Even if it's not, I want to believe it so bad.
Right. But it's just cool to me, a fan of songs, and, you know, just, like, knowing some of those origin stories and stuff, and, like, sometimes it's fun, sometimes, like, you know, some of them you're, like, you kind of wish you leave them open to the imagination and stuff, you know?
Absolutely.
So I don't... Sometimes the stories kind of take away from what you've already built in your head.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I am a fan of, like I said, some of hearing some of that stuff, hearing the stories or where, you know, sometimes where you're at or, you know, different things where, you know, maybe not exactly this is why I wrote the song, but this is where I was, you know, this is kind of set the mood and stuff where you were at and things. And so
absolutely.
Yeah, man. But yeah, I think that would be cool, man. I think it would be fun to get out there and cut a record and share some of these songs with everybody. And
yeah, man. Yeah, it's something that I definitely have in the sights. And when the right cast of characters comes into my life, I'm going to know that it's right.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be ready to do it when that moment happens. Because, like, I love playing a lot of acoustic guitar, man, but I'm an electric guitar player at heart in a lot of ways. And that's what really, really... you know, kind of turns me on, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, about music.
Do you play, Strat?
I play a Tele. Yep. Yeah. I play a Blonde Tele, and that's my main instrument. I had a Les Paul. I still have a Les Paul, but I played that as my primary instrument through most of, like, junior high and high school. And then I kind of switched over to an SG for a little while. And then I was just finding that the more and more I was developing as a player, the more and more I wanted to shy away from, like, really heavy, distorted sort of guitar tones. And so then humbucker pickups just kind of had to not be on the table. And as soon as I got a Tele in my hand, man, you know, that was, like, game over.
Yeah.
That was just, yeah, because you can play anything. I've never been in a musical situation where I didn't feel like I was comfortable on that, on my Tele.
Right.
You know, you can play country, you can play blues, you can play rock, you could play hard rock. You know, it's such a versatile instrument. And it really is a very transparent instrument. The tone of your fingers and the tone of your playing, I think, for my personal taste, shows through a lot more on a Tele than it does on any other instrument that I've ever really picked up, other than, like, just playing acoustic guitar.
Sure. You a gearhead? I mean, like, do you like going to those shops and checking out old amps and all that kind
of
stuff?
Yeah, I'm definitely more of an amp head, because that amp that's sitting right behind you, that's a 1968 Fender Princeton, and I bought that amp when I was 16, and that's been my number one ever since then. And I have a matching 1968 Fender Bassman that's a half stack, and then I got this other half stack that's like an old Mesa of some sort with a custom made head. But that Princeton, man, is like my go-to, and like that thing's got the sound for whatever reason. I used to get into pedals and stuff too. I kind of started to thin out my pedal board, sometimes for rent and sometimes just because, like, signal loss, you know, 'cause the more things you're putting between a guitar and an amp, man, the more you're just cutting your signal down. And so I just bring, like, a tuner and something to push that little Princeton a little bit more, and that's pretty much how I'm doing my sound anymore. And I found that it forces me to be more creative with messing with my volume on my guitar and my tone on my guitar, and, like, coming up with alternate ways to pick and do things that, like, a pedal, you know, would have done the job for, but you can do it in other ways. And I found that I like doing it like that.
Nice. Yeah, man. I did one of these one night over at Killer Vintage.
Oh, I've always wanted to go there. I have not gone yet, but I've heard great things.
That's a cool spot. I mean, I don't know anything about guitars, but just, you know, sitting in a room looking at all these beautiful guitars, like,
yeah,
you know, it's very, very cool spot. So,
heck yeah.
So I'm sure if you know anything about guitars, you would be very excited. I was excited, and I don't know anything about him. So, but I was sitting there talking. I was recording one with Jimmy Griffin. We were kind of talking about with Celebration Day and El Monstero and stuff, and he got to sharing some stories about just, you know, being there, working there, and stuff. He was telling me about a story of, you know, some of the clientele that shops there, and, you know, he gets all these, you know, Billy Gibbons has been Keith Urban, and all, you know, all these great guitar players and stuff. And he said one time they had this old amp, and I have no idea what it was, but they put it on eBay or something to sell, and like in minutes they got a call from Peter Frampton.
Oh, no way, man.
And Frampton's like, hey, I want to buy that, you know, amp, and I'm on the way to whatever, something, you know, it was like something like that. So he, you know.
Frampton has some St. Louis history.
Yeah.
With, you aware of Bob Heil with Heil Sound?
I don't believe so.
He's on the Illinois side of the river, and I cannot think of exactly what town he's in, but he makes microphones and PAs and was doing a whole bunch of shit. Joe Walsh met him. And him and Joe Walsh invented together the talk box.
Oh, wow.
Because he wanted to record it for Rocky Mountain Way. And specifically, that's what the talk box was made for. Peter Frampton heard it, called Joe Walsh, said, where did you get that?
Yeah.
And then he said, man, Bob Heil. So then the next time Frampton came to St. Louis, he looked up Heil, got his talk box, and then went and cut, you know, all the talk box stuff that he's known for. But yeah, those were all, and that guy's still alive.
Yeah.
And he still makes microphones and PAs and does repairs, and Heil Sound is his thing.
Wow.
Cool cat, man, to talk to. He's met everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I had no idea that talk box was originated around here and stuff.
With Heil.
Yeah.
He invented it.
That's crazy. Yeah, that's some cool stuff though, man. I know my buddy Jameson's gotten pretty good at doing some talk box stuff.
Cool,
and they used to do Feel Like I Do and like cover band stuff, and like and then he would also do like what's the Michael Jackson one too.
I can't think of that, but I can hear the tone in my head.
he would do that, you know, use it on that too and stuff, and like, but anyway, it was just cool, like, especially because you don't see a lot of talk box being used, you know. It's like, so I thought that was a lot of fun, especially just for a local cover band kind of thing, that somebody that could actually use it and do it right. And
that's cool. Yeah.
So
I don't know if I've ever really seen one used live, to be quite honest.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's like the first, like, up close. I've seen Joe Walsh live before, but like, you know, some in the back of the arena and things, so you can't really. But
yeah, you can see on the screen that he's using one. Yeah. But
He opened up a Bob Seger show one night, and it was a good time. And,
whoa!
Yeah,
he's Joe Walsh has been favoring what are they, Duesenberg guitars? That's been kind of his thing, and those are super cool guitars. Those are super rad.
Yeah,
yeah.
I also saw him over the summer. I think it was last summer. It was Joe Walsh and Bad Company.
Okay, right on.
Maybe a year and a half ago, whatever it was. But I kind of, at first, when I heard the bill, I just assumed that Bad Company would headline. Mm-hmm. But then I didn't. Then it was Joe Walsh headlining the show. And Joe brought out like an 11-piece band.
Wow.
Had like 2 organ players, like 3 backup singers, 2... I think 2 other guitar players besides him, and bass and like drummer, something like that. Huge band, and it was just crazy, especially having those 2 synth players like doing all the kinds of crazy sounds and stuff. And,
yeah.
But he, man, they played all the hits, you know, all Joe's solo stuff and James Gang and stuff, and a couple of Eagles tunes, and they did I'm blank on the name of the song now. It's an Eagles tune, and he dedicated it to Glenn Frey. He had just passed right before that. And Take It to the Limit, I think.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's always one of my favorite. Randy Meisner does the...
There it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I did Take It to the Limit, and man, I was...
Who did the high stuff? One of his background singers?
Yeah, I think it was.
But that's like, some crazy stuff at the end. That's one of those things that when you're in the car, you try to, and it's just fries your voice.
Yeah.
You know, try to hit those.
Well, he had 2 girls and 1 guy, I think, and like, doing backgrounds with him. Man, I don't know. When he did that, like, especially such a – it was a powerful moment, but also especially dedicated to Glenn. Like, I don't think there was a dry eye in the house after that, man. It was pretty powerful stuff. And, like, so, power of a song, man.
Yeah, man. So, yeah.
Joe Walsh, bad dude. Still got him.
Still,
like,
got him, man.
You know, he sounded – surprisingly sounded really great singing. Like, I was like – you know, that was one thing. I mean, the guitar can still be there, but are the vocals still going to be there? And
yeah.
Like, and same thing with Paul Rogers opening to that Bad Company.
Yeah, well, he was, like, singing for Queen for a hot minute, too. Sure, yeah, he's got some pipes still.
Yeah, and still sounded great. So, like, I mean, those guys have been doing it for, whatever, 40, 50 years now or whatever, something like so. It's crazy.
They had to give up the cigarettes eventually everything and start getting vocal coaches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Well, you want to do another one?
Yeah. This is a tune. I don't remember how old this one is. Within the last few years, I kind of wrote this, and I kind of forgot about it, and then I was, like, going through a bunch of stuff on my laptop one day, just kind of getting rid of extra tracks in GarageBand, but I was, like, listening through them, and I just had this little snippet of the song in there that I was like, oh, man, I'm going to bring this one back out. I haven't really had a title for it either. I got about two or three titles that I float. One will stick eventually. It'll be right as I'm finishing up the record and putting the credits, and I have to choose, and it's like, all right, like, this is the one. So here she goes. So yeah, that'd be another one that probably would be going on the record if there was going to be a record.
Yeah, man. You were surrounded by a bunch of vinyl.
Yeah, man.
You would you Would you like to put it on vinyl if you could get there?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If I could, yeah. If I could press a vinyl, that would be super cool. I actually got a buddy of mine, a couple buddies of mine, have a studio up by my dad's house in this tiny little town that only has like 500 people,
right.
And they have an analog studio in there with quarter inch tape, and like they got a lot of nice mics and equipment and stuff. And I'm thinking that I'm really torn between like going into the studio and cutting a full band record, or going into the studio and just cutting an acoustic record. And I'm kind of back and forth on it in my head. And if I was going to cut a full electric record, I'd probably do it here in St. Louis. But if I'm going to cut an acoustic record, I want to go up and do it up there at that studio.
Yeah.
And if I cut an acoustic record, then I would really want it on vinyl, because it was recorded on analog,
yeah.
You know, and the whole deal. And
that'd be killer, man.
Yeah, and I'd really, really, really like to do that. And that's something that I will do at some point.
I mean, I just think that's like, would be the ultimate, you know, for any artist, you know, just to see your name on a, you know, on a vinyl record.
On an
like
LP,
that. Yeah, yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah.
Just, I think that would be super cool, man.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a couple of friends that have been, you know, fortunate enough to do it, and I've, you know, I'm a vinyl enthusiast myself. I try to buy as much as I can on, and so I'll be happy to buy one of those, man, if we can get there one of these days.
Yeah, well, I'll just give you one, man.
Yeah.
You won't have to buy it. And I'm obsessed with album art, man. That's
for sure. I think that's definitely something that's been lost in translation over the years. I don't.
Yeah.
Think, you know, some people still make cool stuff, but like, you know, it's something also about just having that scale. You know, having it
this big,
yeah, right? Instead of just the screenshot on your, you know, iPod,
yeah, or even a CD. You know, yeah, it's like, just so, yeah, so compressed and small.
But yeah, people used to take time to make, you know, put a lot of work in that art and stuff, and that's what it was art, man.
It was art, yeah. Yeah. It's another form of the art, and like I'm a big, I've been getting into this photography thing super heavy this last year. And something that I would really, really, really love to do is help design album artwork for bands and take pictures for their sleeves,
yeah,
and just like for the liner notes and all that stuff. Like that's something that when it comes time to do my record, I'm most excited almost about doing that than, yeah, I am about just recording the tunes and releasing it, because like I want it to be a certain thing.
Sure. I'm sure there's a lot of people that would love to help you, or have you help them out, because it seems like, you know, a lot of people just don't know what to do with that when it comes to that time.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people are, you know the music and do that stuff, but it's like they just don't have that artistic side of the mind to where what to do, you know, cool stuff for the artwork and things like that. So
yeah,
it's nice to hear that you're, you know, balancing both of them and stuff. But
yeah, man, the visual side of things, I'm a horrible drawer,
yeah,
and stuff, but I've always been such a fan of physical art, especially old advertising and just anything like that, man, because it's so clean and nice. And I would love to like really stretch my creative mind in that aspect, as,
yeah,
well as also doing music, you know.
Yeah, man,
doing some visual art stuff with photography,
that would be cool. Maybe somebody's gonna hear this and give you a job, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I'm cheap.
Yeah.
I'm cheap.
Yeah. Well, I put your picture up here on Facebook and asked some of your friends and fans to submit some questions for you. You care answering some of these?
Absolutely, man.
Yeah.
I'm down.
Matt writes in, what's his favorite guitar lick ever?
Ever.
Do you have one? And if so, can we hear it? If
you can. Favorite guitar lick ever. I would say something along like, I've always liked that kind of notes like that.
Right.
Yeah, that's something that I'd say that's up there as one of my favorites. That's definitely one of my most used licks,
yeah,
when I'm playing gigs, or variations of it, like, I like that
go.
Note particularly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. So getting into some bluesy territories there and stuff.
That's what I definitely came up,
yeah,
learning.
Yeah.
And being really into it. Man, Stevie Ray Vaughan, especially. My mom had that CD in the car when I was like a little kid, and I remember obsessing over that. She had that one. She had the Violent Femmes.
There you go.
And which, she didn't let me listen to that. I used to sneak into her car.
When I'm a walking, I strap my stuff.
It's like one of the first things,
yeah,
I learned, you know. It's just like, yeah, but they throw some bluesy shit in there,
oh, yeah,
too sometimes, man. You know, they're good guitar players.
Yeah. I went to see him not too long ago at the Pageant, man, and like blew my mind. Like, it was such a great show. And
yeah,
like,
I'd love to see him.
And I knew a couple of hits, Added Up and Blister in the Sun. I was, that kind of
like, Come on, Dad, give me the car. Yeah,
like, I was thoroughly entertained the whole time. It was, and they had this like, I guess it's a Barry sax, maybe even lower than that, whatever. But like, this thing was huge.
And, yeah, probably a big baritone sax. Yeah,
and like the guy like had to like stand on a platform to play it, kind of thing. Like it was like,
it was like
the biggest biggest saxophone thing I've ever seen. Man, it was like crazy, but
heavy.
Yeah, it was really cool. But they were a fantastic band, and they I had somebody like playing like mixed percussion on these like steel drum kind of things and stuff too. It's like it was just a great show.
Dick.
So yeah, man. So good if you get a chance to check Violent Femmes out live, do it.
Yeah, because they're someone on my list for sure.
Allie Vogler writes in where he'd like to run away with me to.
Anywhere is the answer. Preferably somewhere warm.
Yeah,
maybe the desert for a little bit. That'd be kind of cool.
I could go for a beach right about now.
Yeah,
Let's see. Spencer writes in, where is Yard Eagle? We kind of touched on that a little bit.
Yard Eagle's hiding out in the nest right now, man, but Yard Eagle's hopefully getting ready to lay an egg.
Yeah. Anna writes in, where does he get them fancy shirts he's always wearing?
Rural King.
Yeah,
that's the key, man. They got all the Wranglers, and you get them on sale.
They got a nice selection of Pearl Snaps.
Hell yeah, they do. Yeah. That and like my dad, like the same thing with all the hats and shit that I have. Like every single one of them is all just like raiding my dad's closet,
right?
Because he was a seed dealer for a long time, and him being a farmer, every single year, they give us promotional stuff to wear, and like all the hats are styled like that, and so I've always just had them and wore them.
Nice. Yeah, man. And then Tom writes in, do you want your Miles Davis record back?
Yeah, I definitely want that back at some point. The Musings of Miles, it's a good one. Red Garland plays piano on it.
Nice.
He can continue listening to it for the killer drum patterns. Maybe they'll put out a Pure October record that is all just Miles Davis jazz standards.
Right, yeah. Yeah, man. Shout out to Pure October. I love those guys. They're a lot of fun.
We went to high school together. Nice. And actually, Tom and I like totally grew up together. They were our neighbors here in O'Fallon. We used to vacation with their family all the time. And yeah, but I'm close with Spencer and Tom for sure. And I know Alex pretty well as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are good guys. Hang out with them fairly frequently.
Yeah.
We jam, too.
Yeah, good dudes.
Maybe they're my bass player and drummer.
Yeah.
At some point in time,
There you go.
Yeah.
But yeah, man. Again, come out, see Jacob with, again, you can see him all around town. You can catch him January 24th at Venice Cafe with Anna Shonoff, right?
I think it's Shainoff.
Shainoff, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry about that, Anna.
That's she gets that a lot.
And every Monday with Native Sons at 1860, River City Opry on February 16th. I forgot to mention this earlier, but February 24th, you can also catch Blue Fruit Snacks in the Halo Bar right after Celebration Day over at the Pageant.
Yeah.
So
it's going to be a good one.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun rock and roll night. So
yeah.
Come get your daily dose of LZ and then keep the party rolling right into Blue Fruit Snacks or afterwards.
BS.
Yeah.
BFS.
But that's going to be cool, man. So, and that's just a neat opportunity that they've been giving local bands to, it's a nice opportunity to kind of showcase, hey, here's a, you might like us too, and especially Anna's vocals, she totally can, pull off some of that plant stuff.
She's very influenced by Zeppelin. Yeah, we're really excited to be doing that. And man, honestly, the Halo Bar totally takes care of the musicians who play there, especially giving them tickets to the show. That's not shit that they have to do,
right?
And they give you a nice bar tab and they're very accommodating. We love their sound guy, so all around that whole Halo Bar thing is really nice.
It's a good
opportunity.
Especially like I said, if you're a fan of the music and that in the band playing, like you get a free show and you get to play and have fun
and get drinks and they pay nice too on top of it. The whole thing's pretty good deal they've got going there.
Yeah, man. But yeah, like I said, you can catch Jacob all over town. So, but yeah, man, it's been awesome.
I really had a good time hanging out this afternoon. I
appreciate you doing this, and hopefully we'll do it again when that record's coming out, man, or Yardbird or
Yard Eagle or something. Yard Eagle.
I was thinking Yardbirds. That's a little other that's Plant or Page.
Page and yeah. Clapton and. Jeff Beck.
Yeah.
Jeff Beck was also in that band, yeah. Page was playing bass when Beck was playing lead, and then Beck bailed on the tour, and then Jimmy Page got promoted up into guitar.
Right.
They had someone else playing bass, and that's how he kind of got his start in the live industry. Obviously, he had been doing studio work for a while, but yeah, that's what really started sparking him being like a shit-hot guitar player, you know?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been awesome, dude.
Yeah, man.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I'll see you soon, man.
Cool.
Hey, everybody. This is Shane Presley here with Rock Paper Podcast. I want to tell you about my friends over at Music Record Shop. Find them right here in St. Louis, Missouri, in the Grand Center area, in the Dot Zach building. Go over, check it out, come by and visit them. You can go by or visit online, shop 24/7 at musicrecordshop.com. Be sure to follow along with Music Record Shop on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. They're giving away tickets and records and all kinds of fun stuff throughout the day. So get involved, shop local, support local business. They got a lot of cool stuff going on. So you can also reach out if you have a local band you want to get your records on the shelf over there. Reach out and see how you can make that happen. Again, musicrecordshop.com.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Well, yeah, that was it.